Chapter 3. A Statue and Two Islands. The phone rang the next day about noon. It was Elaine calling to make plans to go sightseeing. "I've got the day off work tomorrow," she said. "Would you like to see some tourist attractions then?" "That sounds great," I replied. "What do you want to see?" "Well, I'd love to visit the Statue of Liberty," she answered. "We could take the first ferry to Liberty Island in the morning and maybe see the Empire State Building in the afternoon." The Statue of Liberty is on an island in New York Harbor called Liberty Island. There's a ferry service that takes tourists there from the southern tip of Manhattan. We agreed to meet at 9 the following morning. I was excited about the next day's plans. I asked Jason if he wanted to come with us, but he said that he had to work in the restaurant. I spent the rest of the day relaxing and talking to Jason. It was the perfect thing to do because my body was still getting accustomed to the change in hours, and I needed some rest before my first big day of sightseeing. When I walked out of Jason's building the following morning, I was happy to see that it was a bright sunny day. Elaine suggested that we take the subway to the Statue of Liberty ferry. "Great," I replied. I had seen the subway in films many times and was very curious to travel on it in person. We walked into the Times Square subway station and Elaine led me to a platform where the express trains stopped. I looked at the signs and was surprised to see that a number of different subway lines were announced on the same track. "Do all those different lines pass through here?" I asked. "Yes," she replied. "I know that it's a bit confusing at first, but once you become accustomed to it, it's the fastest, cheapest, and most efficient way to travel around the city." While we were waiting for our train, Elaine and I walked to one of the subway maps on the wall, and she tried to explain it to me. It was really confusing. There were 3 or 4 different lines running on the same track in a lot of sections of the map. Also, almost every line had both express and local trains. "The New York subway system was the first to have express trains," Elaine explained. "It makes trips shorter for people who need to travel a long distance like we're doing today. We'll only stop at a few important stations instead of stopping at every single one." She was right. According to the map, if we took the express train, we'd only be stopping at 4 stations instead of about 15. Our train arrived and we got on. I've never been on a subway train that went so fast. In about 10 minutes, we had travelled half the length of Manhattan and were now at its southern tip, ready to take the ferry to the Statue of Liberty. We went to buy our tickets and I saw a sign that said the ferry also went to Ellis Island. "Tell me about Ellis Island," I said to Elaine. "It's an island close to Liberty Island. The majority of immigrants who came to the United States between 1892 and 1954 were processed there," she answered. "Now it's been converted into a museum. If you like, we can go and see it after the Statue of Liberty. The ferry stops at Ellis Island after Liberty Island. We can either get off and see Ellis Island or stay on the ferry and come back to the city." "Let's go and see it," I suggested. "It sounds interesting." We stood at the front of the ferry as it left Manhattan and sailed towards Liberty Island. The harbour is enormous and the Statue of Liberty stands majestically in the middle of it. My excitement and wonder increased as we got closer to it. It was truly beautiful and more impressive than I had imagined. Elaine looked at me and smiled. The Statue of Liberty was the first thing that immigrants saw when they came to the United States, she said. Many cried with emotion when they saw it. It was something that they would never forget for the rest of their lives. She told me more things about the statue as we got off the ferry and walked towards its pedestal. The statue was a gift from the French government in 1876 to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the founding of the USA. the only thing that the city of New York had to do was to build the pedestal for it. However, there was an economic recession at the time, and few people wanted to spend money on it. The arm of the statue that holds the torch was brought to New York and placed in one of the squares in the city to promote the project. It stayed there for 5 years until the decision was made to accept the statue and build the pedestal. The statue was finally erected in 1886. "You're a great tour guide," I said to Elaine. "You know so many interesting facts." "It's what I'm studying," she replied, smiling shyly. "It's funny. I always think that people will find what I say boring." "Well, I don't. So please continue," I said. We walked around the observation area on the pedestal and admired the views of the harbour and the statue directly above. Then we walked up the stairs in the interior of the statue and looked out of the windows in the crown on the statue's head. We walked up the spiral staircase inside the statue. The statue is 22 floors high, so there were a lot of steps to climb. Elaine explained about the history of the statue as we walked up. The statue was designed by a French sculptor called Frédéric Auguste Bartholdi. He used his mother as a model for it, and it took him 21 years to finish it. The interior structure that you can see as we climb was designed by Gustave Eiffel, the same man who later designed the Eiffel Tower in Paris. We finally reached the crown and looked out of the windows at the impressive view. Elaine told me to look at the book that the statue holds in her left hand. July the 4th, 1776, was printed in Roman numerals on it. That was the date that the United States was founded. We couldn't stay there too long because it was a very small area and there were people coming up the stairs behind us. We walked down and, after taking a few photographs from the observation tower, took the ferry to Ellis Island. There are about 100 million people in this country who are descendants of someone who passed through this island, Elaine said as the ferry approached the island. I'm one of them. My great-grandfather came through here when he emigrated from Naples at the beginning of the 1900s. We got off the ferry and spent the next 3 hours in one of the most interesting museums I have ever been to. There were audio-visual exhibits that explained the history of Ellis Island. Its busiest years were from 1892 to 1924, when the island received thousands of immigrants a day. Over 12 million immigrants entered the USA through Ellis Island from 1892 to 1954. I was really impressed by the photographs of the immigrants that were on the walls. Their eyes showed a mixture of hope, fear, and determination. Most of them brought very little with them. They left everything behind, Elaine said as we looked at the pictures. They left their countries, their cultures, their friends and their families for a new life in a new and unknown place. It's hard for us, who can travel anywhere in the world, to imagine what it was like for them. When my great-grandfather said goodbye to his mother in Naples, he knew that he would probably never see her again. Each room that we walked through seemed to have its own particular story. I've read that almost every language in the world was spoken here daily, Elaine said as we walked through the Great Hall. This is where the immigrants went through the final step before they were permitted to enter the United States. We passed a place called the Kissing Post, where the immigrants were reunited with family members who had already immigrated there. The people who passed through Ellis Island helped make this the great city that it is today, Elaine said as we walked to the ferry for our return trip. The only thing that they wanted was the opportunity to work and to make a better and safer future for their children. It really was the land of opportunity for them.